Coming up next on Functional Moms Podcast.
You just said a great word, Kristen, rewarding myself for the day. So if you can talk to yourself and say at the end of your dinner, I am satisfied, I am fueled, I feel good, I'm nourished. And then anything after that is a want. It's not a need. You don't have to reward yourself. You had a great day. You had wins. You did a wonderful job. You're doing an amazing job on the podcast. You don't have to reward yourself. But if you want a piece of chocolate, you get to have a piece of chocolate. It's okay. And when we reframe how we look at it, then we're like, oh, I can sit down and enjoy this. I'm not just going to eat it really fast. And I'm not going to eat it in secret. And I'm not going to not enjoy it.
That's a great piece of advice. I like that reframe for myself, because instead of using it as a reward, it's I really want this. I'm going to have this.
Welcome to Functional Moms Podcast, lifestyle medicine for women over 40. Let's age on our own terms.
Our guest today is Kim Hines, a nutritional health coach whose goal is to help women over 40 conquer emotional eating, feel empowered and peaceful around food, and feel confident in their own skin, all without restrictive dieting.
Kim works with women going through midlife changes and empowers them to take control of their health emotionally and physically with a framework that is not just about food.
Kim, thank you so much for coming on the show today. We'd like to start by asking you, what is emotional eating?
Thank you so much for having me on today. I love what you're doing. So this is going to be a really fun conversation. Emotional eating really is wrapped up in soothing yourself with food. It's a very different story from being hungry and feeling like you're eating because you were so hungry you overate. Emotional eating is when we cope with our day. We are escaping from our day. We are avoiding feeling the feelings, and we use food. And usually it's very highly palatable food that we eat because it also sets off that response in us that makes us feel better temporarily. So eating for hunger, we know those hunger cues. We feel so growly hungry. We get dip in blood sugar, and we know that feeling. But when we eat emotionally, very often it's mindless. It's something where we just, our body gets taken over. We feel like we wake up in the middle of a food fog. It's very different than eating to fuel our bodies. So emotional eating is all about comforting and soothing.
Wow. Is there a difference between emotional eating and binge eating?
There's an overlap. Emotional eating, some people will just grab the sugar and they will grab something when they're not feeling good and they want that dopamine and that serotonin response. And emotional eating sometimes can stop a little bit faster than the binge eating. Binge eating can be a situation where it goes a little bit too far, where someone is uncomfortable, they've eaten way more than they wanted to, they keep going back into the food, but there's that overlap. It really starts, the binge eating happens because of the emotional or the mindless eating. And mindless eating still comes from a subconscious emotion or feeling or need to escape. So they do overlap.
Wow. I see. So I never realized that. And I have to be honest, I hadn't heard the term emotional eating until not that long ago. Binge eating, I was familiar with. But would emotional eating be considered then like an eating disorder, like a binge eating would be? Or is it more in that gray area?
That's more in the gray area. And I think that this is a great topic because something I've talked to women about is how they identify themselves. And many people will say, I'm a stress eater, or they'll say, I'm an emotional eater, but they don't want to call themselves a binge eater because that sounds so much more drastic. It does sound in the disordered eating phase, but they all three really are, because if you're sabotaging your body and you're not feeling good because of it and you're gaining weight because of it, then all of them are really disordered eating. Eating disorders can absolutely run on the other end of it, like binge eating disorder is a true disorder. We don't really see emotional and stress eating. We kind of call that on the lower end, but there's no definition. There's no diagnosis out there in that area. It's really for the binge eating disorder.
I see. So probably a lot more people suffer from this than they realize. And I have to even count myself in that category, because I didn't really realize I did emotional eat sometimes until I actually was on an elimination diet to get to kind of the bottom of some of my gut issues. And I realized that when I would be stressed, I would reach for certain foods that were not didn't really serve me. Like, I, you know, they were crunchy or salty, or they did serve me. I mean, they calmed me down, I guess, but it wasn't really working towards my health goals. It was sabotaging those. So is that kind of like what I'm describing? Does that sound like emotional eating?
Yes and no, because emotional eating can also be fueled by restriction. And that is one of the biggest things that I work with women on, is the fact that when women are dieting and restricting, they tend to binge or emotional eat because of the things that they're restricting on. So yes, and I understand, because I just went through a gut issue also and had to take out gluten, dairy, corn, soy, and I'm going to the pantry and all of a sudden there's not one thing in there I can eat. And so then I crave it more. And so I'm with you. I'm so glad you shared that, because when we restrict and we overly take out foods, our brains are like naughty five-year-olds. They really want what we say we can't have. And when we say no, we always gravitate towards what we don't feel like we have permission to eat. So that is another reason. If we don't have a reason to take those things out, you know, you and I had reasons why we had to take that out for a while. And so that helped me get through it more, because I knew I needed to solve some things. But when you don't have a reason, because you don't have an allergy or you don't have an intolerance to certain foods, the more we restrict, the more we want them. And then we overdo it because we finally get that taste in our mouth.
That makes a lot of sense.
That's me. So you just described me, and I had no idea about this, but I was just sharing because we knew you were coming on the show. And so I was sharing with Kristen when we were trying to figure out, all right, what is emotional eating? And I was like, you know, well, like for me, it's like I would keep nothing, like no snacks or ice cream or nothing in my house. Because my thought was, if I really want it that bad, then I'll get in my car and I'll go get it. So what happened is that when it got to the point where the dam broke and I wanted it bad, I would run to the store. I would get, like, you know, a pint of whatever, and then I would eat practically the whole thing. And because, you know, and I think what it was, and I realize now what it was, that restriction, like I was being rebellious. I was like just breaking all the rules. Like I was not going to be in this like confined place. So what I've been doing as of recent, and it's been interesting having you on and then listening to your podcast, I started doing this, like, I don't know if it was my inner intelligence, but I now buy like ice cream. And then, you know, Kristen had shared with me that Haagen-Dazs is like the cleanest, one of the cleanest ones out there. And they sell it at like right up the road.
Yeah, it doesn't have all the gums. Yeah.
In my house. So I just buy like the plain ice cream, and I always keep it in my fridge. So now if I want some, I just take a couple of teaspoons and I eat some and I put it away and I'm good. And that has been like such a game changer for me. That's when I realized that it was because, I guess, that emotional thing, like I never connected that being the restriction with the emotion. And yeah,
I love that you shared that. Thank you so much for putting that out there, because everyone deals with it in some form. And we have the spectrum, you know, we could be on the low end or the high end. But as women who have grown up in diet culture, all of us are a little bit in there somewhere. I just happen to be on number 10. Because, you know, I'm either in or I'm out. Like I'm did great with the gut health stuff, and then I went nuts when I went on vacation. And it's okay, because we just come right on back. We know what we're supposed to do. But I love how you can have it in the house and having I call them forbidden foods. When you have forbidden foods in the house and you give yourself permission, your body is bringing that cortisol level down. You're not stressed out. You're not freaking out over it. And I'm the same way. I don't want a lot of things in the house, but I've also decided I'm not playing around with these substitutes. Like I tried that whole cheesecake Greek yogurt, you know, with the cottage cheese. I'm like, yeah. What? I'm just going to have a few bites of some cheesecake at this point. That does not work for me. I can get my protein from meat. I'm good. So some of these substitutions, you're playing games with yourself instead of just having a bite. Another thing that I learned to do is I will, if I'm in the store, sometimes I'll grab like 2 York peppermint patties. And that's what I have. And they taste good. And I slow down. And that's the other thing that is so important. When you finally get your ice cream, I know you just did a post on this, so this is so perfect. You sit down and you're not distracted and you're not in front of the TV, or you're not in front of your phone or the laptop. and you eat those bites and you love them. I have this 3-bite rule, and it does not mean eat 3 bites. You can eat 6 bites. You can eat 10, whatever. But that first bite, your taste buds in your body react like, wow, that is so good. And if you're mindlessly eating, you're missing that. And then the second bite's really good. The third bite is awesome. But after we get through these bites, that everything kind of starts just becoming mindless because we get a little dulled through. We're fine. We got that out of our system, but our brain doesn't always click into that. And we just keep going, keep going, keep going. So really pay attention so that you're not in bite 15. And I'm embarrassed to say this, but I tell everyone because this is part of my journey to help other people. Like I would get Girl Scout cookies and I would hide them in my backpack. And when I was younger, and I would not have one, I'd have a sleeve because my brain was like, you're not supposed to do this. So just get them all down. And I would eat them all. So
yes. That's what would happen to me with my pint of ice cream.
Yeah. I get
that.
I'd go
to the store and I'd come back and sometimes I like bring the spoon with me because I'm like, I'm going
yes.
at it.
Yes. Digging in.
Yeah. I'm not holding back.
Oh, I love it.
So what are some causes of emotional eating? Like, why is this happening?
Oh my
gosh.
I know
you said something about like the diet culture.
Yes, we know diet culture and restriction is one of the number one things because we are taught, you know, and I'm a 58-year-old woman, so I've been in diet culture for 30 plus years. That's a long time. That is more time, more than half of my life that I've been conditioned to be skinny, be small, cut back on my food. And, you know, everything from slim fast all the way up to all these newest things. So diet culture is definitely one of the causes. When we are really stressed out and we're not in tune with that stress, we have the opportunity to just check out. We check out and we check in with food when we're stressed out. When we have so much going on in our day, we also are not prepared. We don't slow down. We don't take the time to have that meal ready and have things ready and available for us to eat. So we, of course, package food once we get into it. Again, that hyper palatability of processed food and sugar, we don't have a fighting chance against that if we're slightly stressed out. We're just going to want to keep bringing it on because it sends a signal. It sends a wonderful signal to our body like, ooh, this is good. You're fine. You're okay. But there's some really deep reasons also. There are women who are still dealing with trauma from their childhood that have not really resolved that. And when things get brought up, I have a former client who totally allows me to talk about this, but she had such a rough childhood with her dad and high expectations and always having to be on that whenever someone talks to her the same way, all she wants to do is go home and eat chocolate because she gets that trigger in her body again. So doing the inner work is really important. I have another client who literally apologizes for everything. Even when it's not her fault, she's apologizing because something in her past makes her feel like she has to mediate and take care of things. And again, that makes her want to go eat. So there's so many different reasons. People pleasing, never saying no, by the way, is on my list of health habits. You have to be able to say no and have your boundaries because resentment can bring up wanting to eat. So I've had all of the above.
I'm curious as to the woman that goes back and eats chocolate, the woman that had the father had high expectations and if something reminded, like, but what is it? Like, why is she going to get chocolate? Was there an association like with the chocolate with her? Like, how does that connect?
This is really interesting. I have two answers for that with the connection with food from childhood. The thing for her was just chocolate in general feels like love to her. Chocolate feels soothing and loving. A lot of women find the sweets in the chocolate and the fudge, and that texture is very loving. Getting away from something, a lot of people find the crunchy and salty help them change their state wherever they are. So I find that really fascinating that that happens with my clients, but it's not all across the board, but a majority of them, they kind of fall into these categories. But it's interesting you brought up the childhood because I'll give you an example. If you go back to your childhood and you think about all the rules and all the things that happened in your life that you just fall into, whether it's clean plate club, you know, finish everything on your plate or whatever the rules were, this is a story about chocolate with my mom. I was just telling my mom one day, I said, hey, you know, I don't even like these fancy chocolates like Godiva and all these things. I just love Hershey's. My mom started laughing and she said, I gave you Hershey's bars because my dad was a traveling salesman and gave me Hershey bars when he came home. So my comfort food has come from my mom because she's given it to me. And we just laughed about that because I gave them to my kids too. I was just going to say generationally, we also can pass down the idea of using food to comfort because in our families, food is often how we comfort our kids and how we want to make them feel better. And we also can pass down diet culture. If your mom is always talking about weight, always exercising, always dieting, always talking about her belly. Those are the things that we also pass down, unfortunately.
I know I was going to, my next question was actually about why women eat when they're alone, like have a tendency to do this overeating or mindless eating when they're alone.
That is a great question, by the way. It's alone eating, but it's also secret eating. And the alone eating happens many times because at the end of a day, women finally have a moment with their own thoughts. They finally have a moment to themselves. They have not given themselves that break throughout the day. One of the things that I love having women do is throughout the day, create a habit of mini breaks every hour. Because when we wait till the end of the day to have our own time, to have our own thoughts, to be able to calm down, calm the nervous system down, it's just like a flood. But we don't always know what those thoughts are. We just know that we had a lot going on and we just want to relax. We just want to take care of ourselves. We just want to check out. And I use that term a lot. We just want to check out. Some people do scrolling on Instagram, TikTok, some people watch Netflix, some people drink wine, but food is another way for us to check out. The other thing is when we're alone, we have no judgment. You know, we're not being judged for having that secret eating. And I laugh because sometimes I will grab that cookie when my husband's not in the kitchen. He doesn't care, but we've been brought up to feel shame around having that food. So we would rather do that alone. And binge eating does happen a lot of times alone. We're not going to sit in front of someone. We're going to find a way to hold it off. But I'll tell you something interesting with my women who feel like they want to binge eat, they're waiting sometimes for their husband to leave the room so they can grab that food. And that's a sad state because they're not getting what they need and giving themselves. And let me take that back. They're not getting what they need, but we need to teach women how to get what they need for themselves.
Wow. You know, I find it very, very interesting because once again, you just described something else that I secretly... Ooh, you guys are hearing all my secrets that I secretly do and have done. And what's even more fascinating as you're speaking, because I'm thinking to myself, when I was married, I would come after everybody was like settled, then I would come down the stairs, go into the kitchen. But what was interesting is then I became a single mom and like my kids are little, like at that time, like they were all in their rooms. And I would find myself like, you know, sneaking around. And then I caught myself and I thought to myself, like, who are you hiding from? It's like I'm playing a game with myself. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm playing a cat and mouse game and I am the cat and I am the mouse. Like, it's so interesting to think back at that time. Like, and just, you know, I think I don't do that as much since I've given myself permission.
Yeah, that's a great thing. Great. I have to add too that I can relate to all of this myself, even with eating really well all day and then completely blowing it, like at dinner time or either before dinner because I'm like so hungry. Maybe I didn't eat enough at lunch. I didn't give myself the breaks and then I'm stressed and everything's coming at you at dinner time, right? The kids and there's just so much going on and you haven't like relaxed for the day. So then it's just so tempting to just dive into the chips for me or something like that. And then after dinner, it's the, oh, I need my treat. I need my chocolate. I need my whatever, something to like reward myself and calm myself down for the day. So I'm totally seeing myself in this too.
The evening is the worst time. When I poll the women that I work with, evening is the absolute worst time after dinner for emotional eating.
No joke.
Yes, it is the worst. And the second worst is between lunch and dinner, about 3-4 o'clock. and or getting dinner ready. So the one thing that I love to tell people to do at 3 or 4 o'clock, this has to be very intentional, is to consciously nourish your body and have a mini meal, because cortisol is running low at that point. It's coming down for the day. Our blood sugar could be low. We could have so many reasons. Plus the stress of the day is starting to culminate. We're thinking about dinner. Our brain is trying to switch from work to dinner at that point. So we're going right into the pantry for that easy thing that we can snack on before dinner. So consciously nourishing at 3 or 4 o'clock with, you know, maybe some protein, some fiber, an apple, and, you know, some, you know, nut butter. Or I personally actually have like a little mini meal. I take leftovers because I know I'm going to crash. And then the evening, you just said a great word, Kristen, rewarding myself for the day. So if you can talk to yourself and say, at the end of your dinner, I am satisfied, I am fueled, I feel good, I'm nourished. And then anything after that is a want. It's not a need. You don't have to reward yourself. You had a great day. You had wins. You did a wonderful job. You're doing an amazing job on the podcast. You don't have to reward yourself. But if you want a piece of chocolate, you get to have a piece of chocolate. It's okay. And when we reframe how we look at it, then we're like, oh, I can sit down and enjoy this. I'm not just going to eat it really fast. And I'm not going to eat it in secret. And I'm not going to not enjoy it.
That's a great piece of advice. I like that reframe for myself, because instead of using it as a reward, it's, I really want this. I'm going to have this. And it just seems much more manageable. That's a great way. I love that. And I love your strategy of having the heavy snack before dinner, because I think a lot of times I'm just starving. Like I'm really hungry sometimes. Like if I just was too busy and I didn't eat enough, or if I'm just feeling the stress of the day. So those are great tips.
Thank you.
Many women also make crazy promises to themselves every day. Like they're going to be perfect and eliminate things like it's sugar, carbs, alcohol, whatever it is. And then they mess up and the cycle continues. So how can we break the cycle?
That is so true. Every morning, there's somebody who's saying, I'm going to eat perfectly today. I'm going to track all my calories and macros. I'm going to do all the right things. And then, you know, somebody orders pizza at lunch at work, or they see that muffin when they go meet a friend for coffee, or whatever happens. And the hardest part for women, because we are perfectionists, so many of us want everything to come out perfectly. And I don't know why we think we need to win the perfectionism game. And I don't know who's getting the trophy, but I've never gotten it. And I don't see who's getting it. But we think we have been brought up this way, is what I believe. And I think diet culture, once again, has contributed to this, because we have to do something for 30 days perfectly, or we haven't done it. Somehow it negates all the work you did if you had one little slip up. So one of the things I try to have women do is reframe. And again, it's that permission that when we go into the day knowing that we have permission to do that, that we do the best that we can throughout the day. But I do have a non-negotiable. My non-negotiable is the first meal of the day, because I think that sets us up for the rest of the day. And everybody can get through one meal but without having something. But when we start with the sugary things, or we start with the bagels, and we start with the pastries, and we start with the, you know, the muffins and the sweet coffees and things like that, the problem is we really do change our blood sugar. We really do change our taste buds for the day. We really do set ourselves up. So most women can make it through that first meal and have something savory that is going to really give them a power punch of nutrition. I am very careful. I don't prescribe food. I talk to people about what are your favorite foods. How can we take the foods that you love and the ones that are going to be helping you with your body and helping you with your mind? And how do we put this all together so that I am not a registered dietitian? I'm a health coach. I change habits. That's my strength. I change habits. So we find the food that everybody loves. And some people, they love eggs. Some people don't. They want Greek yogurt. Some people want their leftovers, whatever it is to get them started for the day. So once we get through meal one, anything that happens after that, if they really have a base of nutrition, you can have a little cookie at lunch if you've had your base of nutrition first. If you have a snack in the afternoon and you want to throw in a piece of chocolate, it's okay. But if you do what you need to do first, then all is good. Because malnutrition, when we are missing vitamins and minerals and all the nutrition that we need, amino acids, whatever it is we need. The problem is your body's going to ask for something and it's not going to tell you, hey, you need to eat more leafy greens. It's going to say, grab whatever's in front of you. You need something.
No.
So we really need to take care of ourselves first. And then we're not saying no, you know, just have even, I'm going to have to confess this. Even when I was gluten-free, I was supposed to be sugar-free also, but I had the Simple Mills chocolate chip almond cookies because I can't be perfect. And if I am, then I'm going to just completely lose it when I don't have to eliminate.
Right. That's, I think, what happened to me. I was trying to be perfect and, you know, be like the perfect fitness coach and health coach. And I wanted to be the authentic, like real deal. And I would hold it together for a long time. And then I'm like running into my car with my spoon.
Yes. But that makes you so relatable.
Right. Yeah, it's
yeah,
it's,
you're
it's
a real person.
Really true. Yeah, and you know, so that brings like, so what are ways that we can reduce emotional eating? And I just want to add to that. So another thing that happens to me, and I'm wondering, is this related to emotional eating? And it's like when you have like these crazy cravings. Now, I'm also aware that in the food industry, they have scientists that are making these foods like addicting. So I'm like, okay, am I craving this because of that freaking scientist behind that, you know, salty, crunchy, whatever product? Or is this, you know, am I having a craving and maybe am I having some type of emotional eating situation? And if I peel back, you know, what am I thinking about? Am I stressed out? Is that why I'm craving it? I'm doing it as a distraction or, you know, so I maybe, you know, maybe I just answered my own questions, probably all of the above.
I love that. And I just appreciate you both being really open about this because it helps women understand they're not alone because of that perfection out there. And same thing, you know, as a health coach, I keep feeling like I need to live the life that I want everyone else to live, but I am. I want everyone to be real. But the cravings are really interesting. I think cravings come in on a lot of levels. I do think cravings come in because we are stressed out, we are tired, we have things going on. But what we want is not just the fact that we know that that tastes really good, because you are right. There's somebody in a lab trying to make sure that next Dorito hits it. There's somebody in that lab making sure that they're adding more sugar to Reese's peanut butter cups. Or I have this like conspiracy theory that they're doing that because everything gets sweeter and saltier every year, it seems like. But we might also be more clean eating. So we might think that is happening. So like I said, that's just my theory. But I think that when we have cravings, it is also your craving to feel good. You're craving to feel happy. You're craving to have contentment. You're craving to have joy. You're not just craving the food. And one of my main things, yes, one of my main things is it is not about the food. What are you truly craving? What are you really hungry for?
Yes. OMG.
And like, wow. I'm just going to throw it out here that sometimes it's just really satisfying to like mindlessly eat chips. It is.
Yeah.
I'm like, it might not be the best strategy, but it can be super satisfying. Like, I'm not going to lie about that.
Yes. And if you can give yourself grace and not have shame and guilt, then it's okay. It's all right to have that. I was away in Wisconsin and a friend of ours made 3 loaves of sourdough bread in 3 different flavors. And I was like, this gluten-free thing's not happening. And I just let myself have it the whole time. And it was so satisfying. And I had to keep saying, Kim, it's okay. Give yourself grace. This is what it's for. And it was hand-baked. Why would I turn that down? And yeah. I love that you can see that. Like, hey, it's very satisfying sometimes just to have it.
Right. And there's something to be said in the value of connection. Food is another way that we connect as humans and, you know, having a meal, sharing a meal. That's one of my favorite holidays is Thanksgiving, just because of that, because there's no other agenda. We're just breaking bread together. Like, we're just hanging out and sharing meals. And, you know, it's interesting when you said they're adding more sugar, adding more salt every year. And it made me think, Kristen, when you used to say, I would love to read the ingredients on what was in this 10 years ago. Yeah. How has it changed? Like, to see an original wrapper.
Yeah, or even, right. Like when we were kids, what an Oreo was like compared to what an Oreo is now, I'm sure it's a lot different looking. Not the classic ingredients that you would think. So yeah, that is a thing, I think. It's hard for people to control products when they have all those things in them. It's definitely not as easy. So I try to go for more homemade stuff if I can, or, you know, like bread like that would be amazing. The cleaner stuff, I feel like, is easier. At least I'm not fighting that scientist that derived all that stuff for me to overeat.
Yeah, exactly. So. And, you know, I think also, I just want to also share with like any woman that's listening, just the all or nothing mindset. I think this all comes a lot to the all or nothing mindset. I think that if you really are trying to meet the mark most of the time, and it's not that you're being, I try to reframe it in my mind. I'm not being restrictive. I'm trying to eat healthy. I'm trying to be my personal best. I want to be a healthy version of myself. And if I keep like my little, you know, Haagen-Dazs ice cream in the freezer, and I'll have a couple of scoops and I'm okay. It's okay. I'll share. I went to a party and I had it all. And I was laughing with my friends and I had a great time and I had a drink. And that's part of living a healthy lifestyle.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't like the word balance, but there is a way to find some kind of feel good. And I will use the word balance because I can't think of anything else, where we are nourishing our bodies and we can love our bodies as is in any part of our transformation, and then also enjoy life. And for those of you who are moms, my kids are a lot older. They're 20, 23, 24, 25. And so I had two of them. I have two stepkids, two biological. I had my biological kids on my podcast. And I asked them, you know, what was it like growing up in our household? How do you feel about where you are right now? And because I became a health coach probably like 7-8 years ago. So they were in the house during that time. And you worry about your kids. You know, they get to a point where they can drive and they have their own food and they can go to Chick-fil-A and they can go to the gas station. And my kids share that story, but they're all going to be okay. If you can help them with some balance and you can help them understand just, you know, the quality of food, what's the difference? We have our nourishing food and we have our fun food, and it's all food. But when we label it good or bad, then we label ourselves good or bad when we eat it. We don't want to pass that down. And it was fun to hear my kids say, no, you were pretty healthy and we weren't going to always do what you wanted us to do, but we see the value now and they're cooking for themselves now. And it all works out.
That's a huge win. That's really great to hear. My kids are still a little younger, but I hope that ends up like that.
Yeah, Kim, actually, you and I have a lot of similarities. We're both 58, and I have four kids, and they're 26, 24, 21, and 20.
Wow. So we have the same, like, closeness with all of them. Yes. Yeah. Oh, it's so fun to see them evolving in health and food. And, you know, I have a couple that are not that into it now, but maybe they will be. And I have a couple who really are into it.
So we have a very important question for you. We would like to know, how can women make peace with their body in midlife?
This is such a beautiful question. Making peace with our body goes so much deeper than just the physical body that we have. We really have to make peace with ourselves. And I think at midlife, when you hit 40, 50s, 60s, we're also striving to find ourselves. We are having a rebirth a lot of times, whether it's career. Yeah, your kids are getting older. There's so many different things happening with yourself that truly being authentically yourself is the first step to having really good body image, is knowing that you can use your voice, knowing that, and that has to do with emotional eating too, but knowing that you can use your voice, you can speak your needs, you can be in a loving and direct way, tell people, you know, that yes, you're interested in doing something, no, you're not. Just knowing what you like and knowing what makes you happy. Because when we finally can be comfortable with ourselves, then we can let go of what we're seeing on social media. We don't compare to other people. We don't have to keep up in the aging process. We know what our values are. We know what we stand for. And that's the hardest part. We bring all this stuff. We raise kids and we're so busy and we're working and we're trying to help them that we don't even know what we stand for sometimes. And we get to this age and it's a beautiful rebirth of, hey, what's my purpose now? What do I have to offer the world? And it's a lot more than my body. But getting used to your body and knowing that you can always transform is also important. We don't have to stay where we are. We can look in the mirror and say, you know what? I am, and I have my clients do this all the time and say, I am perfect the way I am, but I'm allowed to change. I'm allowed to transform. I'm allowed to get better. And I am allowed to love myself as I am, because we've been taught for years and years and years, you can't love yourself if you're not skinny. You can't love yourself if you're not small. You can't love yourself if you're not a model with symmetrical features. And now you can give yourself permission to love yourself. Nobody else has to do that for you. But it's a very long and it's a struggling process for many people. And it takes a lot of time to do the inner work. All of this, again, is so not about food and exercise, even though it is. Those are the basic things we really need to be doing. It's about doing the inner work. And I have kind of a, we are all messy at this stage. And I have this little saying, M-E-S-S-I instead of Y, you know, working on muscle takes away from worrying about what your body looks like. Getting strength, muscle's the M. E is consciously nourishing your body. No matter what treat you have, eat it. The S is reducing stress, giving yourself breaks. The other S is self-care, and that is not massages and bubble baths. That is more like, what do you love to do? Find yourself a habit that you like, something you wanted to do. What's a hobby? What's something? I'm teaching myself Spanish again in Duolingo. It's silly. I'm a geek. I love that stuff, but it gives me joy every day to keep my streak going. It's so dumb, but I love it. And the I in messy is the inner work. When you're doing on the inner work, all this inside, this outer part is going to transform itself, but you may not be able to do that until you know what's going on inside.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that sounds like the difficult part to me, the inner work, because if you don't really have a framework on that, like, you know, throughout life, we're not really taught to do that kind of work. But I do find a lot of people in midlife seem drawn to that work. Which maybe I guess there's purpose there. I'm not sure.
Oh, I think that's amazing. I think it's true. When we get to this age and we're reflecting, we are much more drawn to it. But again, we're finding ourselves. When we're younger, we just don't have the time, or we're all a little more, I think we're a little more surfacey when we're younger too, because that's what we're influenced by. And it takes a while for us to dig a little deeper.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So being mindful of our time today, Kim, what are two simple things we could do today to stop emotional eating?
My first one, which I've already mentioned, but I think it's so important, is to really eat consciously, to make sure you're feeding yourself. And we didn't get into the idea of fasting or not fasting, or, but I have clients that will come to me and say, I ate one meal today, I'm doing so well. But really, we need to consciously nourish our bodies and feel satisfied 3 to 4 times a day. And I think that is the number one thing that will help us at the end of the day not binge because of hunger. But the second part of it, this is my emotional side, is giving yourself those mini breaks every single hour, whether it's stepping outside to see sunshine, closing your eyes for a minute to get off the computer, looking at the trees, taking a step and doing some breath work, maybe just listening to some music, whatever you can do to take a break every single hour. By the time you get to the end of the day, you have already built up this system of taking care of your nervous system before you're ready to jump into the food. And if it's okay, I'd love to add one more if that's okay.
Absolutely.
So the third one is give yourself permission to eat, because we are not in a set of rules that somebody made. You're not going to go to jail for eating the piece of chocolate. You have permission to eat a little treat once in a while. And when you do that, you'll find that you'll eat that and it'll be enough where we don't have to have the whole pint, or I don't have to have the whole sleeve of cookies. If I can just have a one or two cookies after a meal, and satisfy that feeling and taste it. But the key is when you give yourself permission to eat, to actually sit and eat it with no distractions and love every bite, and then put your hand on your belly and say, I am satisfied.
You can connect with Kim on Instagram and Facebook. Her handle is at Kim Hines Health. And definitely check out her podcast. It's called The Emotional Eats Podcast, and it's full of great interviews and tips for women. Kim is also on LinkedIn at Kim Hines Health and Wellness, and her website is kimhines.com. We will link all this in the show notes.
Thanks so much for coming on the show today, Kim. We learned a lot from you. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, and I appreciate you sharing your stories.
The information provided in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purpose of diagnosing, curing, treating, or preventing any disease. We are functional medicine certified health coaches and not licensed medical professionals. The opinions and advice of guests are their own and also not considered to be medical advice. Always consult with a healthcare professional when making any healthy lifestyle changes.
We would love to hear from you. Please leave a comment or review. Email us at info@functionalmoms.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please hit the subscribe button.